We are heading into perhaps the most consequential local election in recent memory. Forecasters are expecting big gains for Reform and the Lib Dems and a bad showing for Labour and the Tories. Could we be looking at the end of the two-party system? To make sense of what comes next, please do come along to our local elections shake-up event. Join the Spectators panel and special guests Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg and Zia Yusuf as they analyse the results on the 7th of May at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. For tickets, go to www.spectator.co.uk/local-elections-live.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Patrick Gibbons and today I'm joined by our Deputy Political Editor James Hill and Michael Martins of Overton Advisory, and who previously worked as a former aide to both Liberal and Conservative politicians in Canada. The world woke up today to the news that Mark Carney, who many listeners will know as the man who led the Bank of England for almost 7 years, has won the Canadian election. Here's a clip from his victory speech earlier today.
As I've been warning for months, America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never ever happen. But we also must recognize the reality that our world has fundamentally changed.
Now, James, there are a number of reasons why this is such a big achievement for Carney. This was Carney's first election, having been Prime Minister for just over a month and without a parliamentary seat. The Liberals have won an unprecedented fourth term. And just a few months ago, the Conservatives had a poll lead of over 20 percentage points. And to top it all off, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre is projected to lose his seat. You write on Coffeehouse that this is nothing short of exceptional for Carney.
Yes, to have a kind of turnaround like this is pretty exceptional, even in this age of political volatility. Mark Carney, 4 months ago, of course, was not even in politics, let alone sort of running to be the leader of a G7 economy. And yet what he's able to do is win a fourth term, despite historic unpopularity by the Liberal Party, who some commentators were suggesting could come third back in January. The reason for this, of course, is Donald Trump and Trump's continual boorish behaviour towards Canada, both in terms of the tariff threats and literal annexation threats, are the primary reason why the Liberals have been able to turn it around. They've been on the right side of a sort of patriotic liberalism throughout this whole campaign. Mark Carney ran a single-issue campaign, campaigning on strength. And against that, Pierre Poilievre's Conservatives failed to come up with an answer in the short term and have therefore paid the price, with Poilievre even losing his seat today.
And Michael, as James mentions there, you know, President Trump and the influence on this election, today marks his 100 days in office and his calls for Canada to become the 51st state, as referenced in the clip we've just heard from Mark Carney, seem to have had a rally around the flag effect. How much of this win was just down to Donald Trump?
I think a lot of it was down to Donald Trump. I think, as James pointed out, Carney ran on essentially a single issue campaign of standing up to President Trump. And I think his base and voters in both Liberal camps and the NDP camps were rallying around this idea of patriotism, of strength in Canada. Like, there have been boycotts of American products and the like. And I think Carney really leaned into that and built a campaign essentially from scratch, like around this issue. Like, rather than treating it as a threat, he treated it as an opportunity and went for it.
And James, to what extent can Pierre Poilievre be personally blamed for this defeat? You were in Canada earlier this year, shadowing the election. You know, what were your observations on him?
Well, it was an extraordinarily sort of triumphant time for the Conservatives. I was there the week that Justin Trudeau had just resigned, and they were looking and saying, you know, who is going to be able to take over? Most Conservatives, I think, would have preferred to face at that point were saying to me, Justin Trudeau, then whoever they pick. But they were looking around and thinking it's either going to be Mark Carney or Chrystia Freeland. Freeland, of course, was the finance minister who resigned back in December. That in turn triggered the sort of move against Trudeau within his own party and led to his resignation at the beginning of January. But they were pretty confident, I would say. They were looking at the polls. They'd been ahead of that point for sort of by 20 points for about 2 years or so. And really, they were saying, you know, whatever happens, we're not fazed. What, of course, came along was two things, one of which they could foresee, which was Donald Trump's election and how you plan for that. And the second thing, of course, was just this extraordinarily sort of rally around the flag effect that Mark Carney has cultivated, which they took too long to respond to. I think that, you know, Donald Trump is the reason why Mark Carney won. But equally, that is a convenient narrative for a lot of Conservatives to now say. We should be frank about this. There were sort of 4 months. It was clear at various points that Poilievre was not responding sufficiently critical of Trump. perhaps picking a fight with the kind of minority of his party who were in the sort of MAGA aligned movement, and making clear that he could outflank Donald Trump in the rhetoric and stand up for Canadian patriotism, given, as I say, there was literal annexation being threatened of his country, I think might have been able to put a bit more clear blue water. I think also in terms of the Mark Carney thing, I think some of his team underestimated how important and effective Carney would be. Clearly, what they hoped to do was try and tie him to the Trudeau regime. There was this nickname for him, Carbon Tax Carney. They wanted to talk about the fact that Mark Carney had been responsible or advocating for some of the most unpopular Justin Trudeau policies, like having carbon tax pricing, for instance. And yet what happened, of course, Mark Carney came in, killed that, killed the capital gains policy, and was actually able to effectively govern as, at least a few weeks or months, a progressive conservative, a traditional progressive conservative, rather than a kind of liberal. So Justin Trudeau is much more centre-left, emphasis on the left. Thus far, Mark Carney is governed as a centre candidate. And that's like basically I've been able to rally around the flag for 6 weeks, get everyone together. And I think Pierre Poilievre have struggled to respond to that. I think that he's championed a really interesting form of politics since becoming leader, the Canadian Conservative leader. But I think right now, given he's lost his seat, I think there's definitely going to be lessons. And I think the importance of which is, ironically, for a politician who campaigned so much on speed and rapid comms, he failed to pivot and adequately accept and acknowledge and appreciate the Canadian Liberal threat.
Michael, James touches on the narrative there for Conservatives. You know, how much of the Trump effect was just about personality? Who's the better leader, for example, to stand up to Trump, you know, Poilievre versus Carney? Or was it actually about the centre-right brand or the Conservative brand being tainted in some way?
So I think it was kind of a mixture of both. I think for some of the Conservative strategists and voters that I've talked to today, basically, there's frustration because the focus for them has been on domestic issues like high taxes, inflation, cost of living, immigration. And at the same time, for the liberal side of the shop, you know, theirs is much more about like, we think Carney will be able to deal with Trump better. And I think that split actually kind of helped the liberals build a bigger voting like a bigger electoral coalition, because they could bleed votes away from the NDP and maybe some more scared voters in the conservative shop. And I think as James pointed out with Poilievre, you know, not being able to carve out his own narrative on the international stage, I think hurt him, because he wasn't able to poach voters from the liberal camp. I don't think NDP would go for him, but from the liberal camp, which is usually how the conservatives tend to be get into power in Canada.
I think to offer the defense of Poilievre, he was probably thinking at the start of this year, I'm going to probably be the next Canadian prime minister. I therefore need to treat Trump very carefully. That probably inhibited some of the attacks, unlike sort of Mark Carney, a lot of the liberals who are like, let's go for this, you know. And so that probably inhibited at the start. So I do think that could be a quicker turn. Set against that, I do think two interesting things, which, you know, I certainly need to take account as a commentator and someone who's written about this. Number one, the really interesting thing, of course, is the way in which the NDP vote completely collapsed, even as Carney was tacking to the centre. And so, obviously, the NDP was the sort of the left-wing party. So the interesting thing, of course, was that it now seems clear in retrospect, a lot of voters went to that left-wing party, not particularly wanting a left-wing alternative, but rather expressing dissatisfaction with Trudeau's government while being unwilling to back Poilievre in the polls. So I think that's an interesting thing. Often voters might express a preference for a party while actually being able to come back to it under new leadership or a different taint of tack. The second point as well, I think, is, you know, as commentators, we often praise people for consistency in politics. I think Mark Carney has shown that you can basically write a whole book advocating a series of policies that completely run against those policies and still win a shock election. Unlike Pierre Poilievre, who, you know, was able to be quite consistent on fiscal issues throughout sort of 2020, 2021. He was warning consistently and a very much a lone voice that there was going to be inflation, high inflation of sort of 10% caused by the COVID policies on macroeconomics. But you've got no reward from that. You know, being right in politics doesn't always mean you get reward at the ballot box. And I think we've seen that too.
And just thinking domestically, are there lessons there for the Conservatives here at home and Kemi Badenoch?
This is, I think, the real danger is that in some of the immediate sort of aftermath, people say, well, Poilievre lost, you know. I've made the points about responding rapidly. And I think obviously it's very easy to sit here and criticise what his campaign did. But I do think that we should not throw the baby out with the bathwater, in the sense that Poilievre was able to win over under 35s. He was able to get 40% of the vote. He was able to kill off the right-wing threat from a splinter party post-2021. And he was able to run a hugely impressive campaign in many ways for the past 2.5 years. All of those have lessons for the Conservatives. I mean, my God, the Conservatives in this country, the average vote now, more likely to vote Conservative than Labour, is in the early mid-60s. They're competing for 20% of the vote with Reform. And frankly, I think a lot of the comms out of the Conservatives over the past 12 months leaves a lot to be desired. So I do think there is a lesson there in how do you build a ideologically coherent, voter-compatible bloc, which able to stress, for instance, fiscal conservatism in a sort of modern age with social liberals backing you, while also sort of taking account of things such as sort of housing, modern problems, etc. And I think Pierre Poilievre has more to teach us than not in terms of how you build a coalition, even if the execution at the last hurdle in this marathon race did fall short.
And just lastly, James, presumably Keir Starmer will be welcoming a left-wing ally in, you know, in the G7 and the global West, and someone that presumably the government, you know, feels it can trust.
Well, I mean, he put out a statement this morning. I feel like it would almost be insert name here, published statement. You know, it could be congratulate Mark Carney / Pierre Poilievre blank on their election victory. Canada is a strong ally, you know, all the sort of usual bland number 10 press office platitudinous lines. I think deep down there will be a really interesting point. And actually, just talking before we came on air, Michael made a really interesting point about how actually a lot of people in Labour will be looking at how Mark Carney was able to come back with this victory as a way of beating kind of an anti-incumbent party in the Conservatives. Mm. And there'll be lessons there potentially for Labour in terms of the UK politics here. Although I would stress, of course, we've got the Australian election later in this week. Anthony Albanese is set for re-election there. So the danger, of course, for Labour is you look at these and you think either you ditch your leader and you win re-election like Canada, or you stick with the leader and you win re-election like in Australia. So I think there's always lessons to be teased out. But I'm interested in what you think, Michael.
I think a big lesson for Labour here is that you can win on a single issue and you can energize people on a single issue. You don't necessarily need, like, I think Labour came into power here not necessarily saying much aside from we're going to be a different party than the Tories. We are change. And I don't think they'll be able to do that again. I think they'll need to be able to harness energy in a way that, you know, you'll need in a second election. And, you know, to be fair to Pierre, he didn't win, but I think if Trump hadn't come along, he would have won because he did move the debate over. Like, he did move it progressively more and more towards the right, and it just didn't go his way. And I think Labour can take lessons from both sides of that. Like, you can be consistent and move the debate in your direction, but you also need to energize voters in a way that Carney did over in Canada.
I mean, I'm reminded of Donald Trump's reported favorite quote, Mike Tyson, that great sage: everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And unfortunately for the Conservatives, they were punched in the face. Another point about single issue election, I think that is inconsistent with the last two UK elections we've seen here. 2019, it was the Brexit election. The Conservatives were on the right side of that. 2024, they were on the wrong side of that because it was simply anyone but Tory. The challenge for Labour is to ensure that the next election is not anyone but Labour and potentially one about public services, for instance.
Well, thank you, James. Thank you, Michael. And thank you for listening to Coffee House Shots.